Hi, I'm Mike Sainsbury and welcome to this ASI cast. Last year, a consortium came together to look at current television audience measurement practice. They wanted to determine whether industry stakeholders felt that measurement systems needed to be upgraded. In this podcast, Richard Marks interviews John Watts, managing partner of research agency MTM, who talks about the origins of the extensive research study they conducted on behalf of the consortium, its main findings, and where the project will go from here.
Okay, well, I'd like to welcome you to the podcast, John, and perhaps start logically at the genesis of the whole project. So how did the consortium come about, and at what stage did MTM get involved?
So MTM is a research and strategy consulting business specialising in media and technology, and we have always worked with TV audience measurement data on behalf of our clients. You know, our clients obviously want to understand what's happening to their audiences, they want to understand how their content is performing, they have to understand the ad market, obviously, and they've always used ratings data, and it's always been a part of our projects. And several years ago, as it has done with pretty much everyone in the industry, it started to become very clear that the industry was going for a real step change. And we were particularly interested by the differences between the European approach versus the US approach. And it became apparent to us that there was a really interesting opportunity to take a good hard look at where the European market was, and then to take stock of the US market and to think about whether there are additional initiatives that Europe's broadcasters should be taking to remain competitive and survive as the market shifts to a more complex multi-platform environment. So we basically put together an invitation letter to a number of our clients, sent it out, and we were delighted that four clients signed up to join the project, which became the consortium. The four clients, as you probably know, were Sky Media, Adobe's advertising cloud division, Alfonso, the US data business, and then TV Beat, a European data business. So the genesis of the project really was that letter, which we sent out in December 2017. And obviously with the Christmas break and other things, it took a little while to assemble the troops. But basically by mid-January, we had the consortium formed, we'd agreed a model, we had a plan for the project, and off we went. So that was where it came from, basically.
Because there was an announcement in the spring. At that point, what I didn't realise was that you were the progenitors of the whole project, in the sense that it was you having the idea and getting people on board to talk.
And I think, being fair, I think we were pushing at something of an open door, in that when we went out to the market, it was pretty clear that everybody was thinking the same thing, that the Europe's JICs, who I'm tremendously supportive of, I think they are there to do a very, very important job, and we can talk a bit about our perspective on that, but it's clear that there's an enormous amount of change in the market. So the door, as I say, was very much an open door. I think there was lots of interest. And we also partnered with two organisations, EGTA and the EACA, the European Association of Communications Agencies, who played a sort of steering group role and inputted, you know, invaluably. And I think they did so because their members were saying the same thing that the consortium founders felt, that there's a lot happening in the market and it's important to take stock of where we are and where we're going.
So how did you go about speaking to the people you needed to speak to? What methodology did you use to gather the information to corroborate the hypothesis or challenge it or whatever?
So it's a really good question. So we went through four or five different stages. We initially spent quite a lot of time with the four consortium members, really understanding the issues that they felt were pertinent and germane and were worthy of exploration. I think one thing that came out of those initial discussions, which we then used to structure the project subsequently, was the notion that we weren't trying to compete with the roadmaps that the JICs have already laid out in different European markets. The focus of the project was very much on what else do we need to do in addition to supporting and working with the JICs and their roadmaps, which I think broadcasts in every European market do. So the initial wave of discussion was with the consortium members. We then went out to the market and across the five key geographies we focused on, UK, France, Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands. We spoke to a cross-section of industry participants, both advertisers, agencies, trade bodies and industry groups, these sorts of things. And that was really a fact-finding and scoping exercise. Once we'd done that and we'd firmed up on our methodology, We complete a second wave of interviews, now with a much clearer agenda and scope of work. And that then fed into a piece of research and analysis, looking at what was happening in each market, and then a program of seminars. And the seminars were probably just worth dwelling on briefly. But we basically felt it was a really important part of the project, which was to gather quite large groups of people from across each market. So in the UK, we've had 30 to 40 people gathered at Sky's offices in Victoria, Sky Media's offices, for a very structured debate about where the market is and where it was going. And we used those sessions to both conduct informal surveys, obviously of a very non-representative sample, but provided lots of useful insight nevertheless, and also to debate a set of priorities. And we used various scoring methodologies really to try and get to a set of clear priorities that the industry and each market could align around. Then we did a sixth session where we looked at the pan-regional perspective. So one theme that I think came out of the project was this sense that Europe is obviously a sort of fragmented patchwork quilt of very different individual TV markets, each with their own unique characteristics, and that's clearly not going to change anytime soon. But there was a real appetite, I think, on the part of many industry participants to look at opportunities to deliver a more consistent approach to measuring TV audiences across these geographies. So, for example, it serves nobody's interest to have a different definition of a view across all these markets. There are principles which you can relatively easily roll out, or at least set on a roadmap as something that the industry will try to converge with. And particularly for the big pan-regional broadcasters, the RTLs, the Discoveries, the Viacoms, the fact that you have slightly different approaches in every geography is a real headache. I think from a competitive point of view, it's also becoming an issue for the industry, because there's no doubt that Google or Facebook and Google go in, and one of their big selling points to advertisers is that they offer a semi-consistent platform with the same kind of measurement criteria, data, targeting attributes available across every geography. And obviously, there are lots of issues with those platforms, but the consistency point is something that resonates quite strongly with agencies and advertisers. It just means they can buy quickly and simply. So we spent the sixth session that we ran, the sixth seminar, which was also in London, which is where most of the big, at least pre-Brexit, most of the big regional broadcasters are based, looked at some of those issues. And then we essentially tied everything up. We spent some time with EGTA and the ESCA developing out our conclusions and recommendations. Obviously then the consortium fed in. We had an initial executive summary report came out in December, which is available. There is now a full final report that we'll be happy to provide to your good selves to circulate.
Yeah, we'll include them with the show notes.
Marvellous.
A link to it, if you're able.
And that's going to be just fine. So that's going to be briefed into the press in the next few weeks.
Yeah, because there's been a number of events. I mean, certainly Mike and I were at one that EGTA organised back in early December, I think, and you've had one more recently in Budapest, I think.
That's right.
For the launch of this. So what the report does really well, I think, is highlight the five key sort of points going forward that seem to be not necessarily, I guess, 100% consensus amongst all your stakeholders you spoke to, but certainly they're the ones that seem to emerge as the things that people can agree around. Obviously people will be able to read what those were in the report. Are there any that you particularly highlight as key ones? And also, is there anything that perhaps surprised you? Because you were keen to start this project and find out what happened, and you had, as you said, some perhaps preconceptions. There's one I'd like to talk about, the relationship between the between the US and Europe, but were there any things that came out that actually made you think, actually, no, that isn't what we thought when we started this project?
So the thing that I found most interesting is that the project obviously ran for quite a long time, over a sort of 9-month period. And I think the thing I probably found most interesting is literally watching the views of industry participants change during that 9-month period. So 2018, I think, was a year of tremendous change. Obviously, it wasn't so much that new things were launching. I think it's more that we saw the next wave of TV services making their way onto televisions, and some of the problems and challenges facing the industry, I think, started to really gain traction and move to the forefront of people's minds much more readily. So if you look at the UK, for example, the proportion of viewing that's unmatched in households continued to grow throughout that period. There was some very interesting data put out into the market by Liberty Global late last year, looking at the scale of Netflix on their platform. And they see it obviously growing very far and fast at a real pace. I think they claim that it grew at around 40% during the course of that year in terms of total video time on their platform, and is now firmly lodged amongst the largest channels in the UK. But of course, unlike those channels, it's still growing at a trot. So I think the most obvious thing that came out of the project was the sense of urgency really accelerated. I think the second thing that came out very strongly was a sense that collaboration, which obviously, you know, has been becoming a more prevalent theme in the industry for some time, but a sense that we really need to do more as an industry, the TV industry, to collaborate closely, to do things that historically we might have competed over, but actually we serve nobody well by competing over some of these things. So I think if you look at, say, the AdSmart rollout in the UK, I think that's a really good example of how these things work. So obviously Sky and Virgin compete head-to-head very brutally for broadband subscribers and pay TV customers and so on, but it doesn't really serve either of them well to have completely competing addressable TV platforms. And obviously, I think Sky's has been deployed for some time. They've taken steps to obviously roll out AdSmart this year across the Virgin platform. And I think we will see a lot more collaboration like that. Buyers, advertisers, and agencies clearly want a more consistent, advanced market that allows them to do lots of the clever things they can do with digital businesses, which TV companies, I think, are very well positioned to do in many respects. But if Europe is a fragmented quilt of different countries, and within each country we have dozens of different solutions, data points, measurement solutions, pools of insight, buckets of inventory, which offer slightly different attributes from a targeting point of view, the market will have difficulties. And it's clear that the buyers don't want that.
It's interesting you highlight that, because obviously the origins of the JIC systems and JIC measurement has come from TV up until recently, and it's a theme in a number of your comments, has been primarily a country-based regional thing where the broadcasters funding a particular service, whether it's BBC ITV, Channel 4 in the UK, RTL in Germany, TF1, whatever, that the primary thing has been their local concern. And building a system that serves the French market, the German market, etc. And also that the JICs are primarily funded by the main broadcasters. So looking at your conclusions, one of the things that Mike and I were discussing in preparation for this is who pays for this? Because arguably, if a JIC system becomes more able to measure addressable advertising, much more better at interfacing with targeting systems, etc. If your main funders are traditional, I use the word in inverted commas, broadcasters, who may see a loss of revenue as a result of those changes, they've already invested heavily. The main money that's been spent around Europe in enhancing JIC systems has been around broadcaster VOD, incorporating that into the systems. They spent a lot of money on that. So who pays for this?
So candidly, I would completely agree with everything you say. I think, as ever, Richard, it's a really well-observed observation, and it's very true. I think there's a couple of things I would say. First of all, I think it will continue to be the case for the foreseeable future that JICs in individual European markets continue to serve the interests predominantly of local broadcasters who are paying for these systems. We spent a long time looking at the prospects of TAM convergence. And I think the difficulty to some extent is obviously that there are very highly deployed systems with many decades, in many cases, of legacy, and tradition and good practice associated with them. And I don't think there's any appetite that I've observed to tear that up and start again. I think at the same time, there's a sense that those measurement systems do need to be upgraded, and that's now in process across every European market. The payment question, I think, is one that there is almost no consensus about. I think what is very clear, I think there are a few things that did emerge. I think one is very clear that advertisers and agencies are looking for more consistent ways of measuring video from a range of different providers, not just from people we used to call TV companies, and we probably now have to start calling something else, but the broadcasters. I think secondly, it's very clear that broadcasters have a set of principles which benefit both sides of the market, the buy side and the sell side. TV advertising tends to be brand safe, fully viewable. You know, the industry has very high standards and doesn't mark its own homework. The industry applies those standards, and if you want to be measured by one of the jigs, there are certain things you have to do. There are codes of practice, there are codes of conduct, obviously across the industry. I think the sense is that if the digital businesses won't be measured on the same basis, which the buy side, the advertising agencies clearly would like to see, they're going to have to accept some of those principles, and they will also have to support the funding of some of these measurement systems.
This is a really interesting point, because the I was discussing this with someone a couple of weeks ago, because there's two layers of, if you speak to digital business, some of the resentment can be that they're keen to join the industry currencies in some cases, but they're being told to join the industry currency, you have to play it our way, you have to use our metrics and report in this way. And there's some pushback saying, well, surely it's time to have some new metrics that work for both broadcast and online. But that comes back to that original point and that suspicion that perhaps it's there's a difference between the JIC and the broadcaster. The JICs, perhaps, and I, you know, my general observation would be that the JICs are perhaps keener to get the Googles and the Facebooks on board than their stakeholders, and that the stakeholders and the JICs are not necessarily the same thing. And therefore, you know, a JIC may say, yeah, great, let's get Google and Facebook on board, but then the broadcasters who fund it may be saying, well, hang on a sec, that will give them the oxygen of audience measurement, that may damage our revenues. Our biggest strength at the moment is that we have this thing called BARB or AGF that gives us currency rating, and the Googles and the Facebook don't. So there's a real pressure here that's going to come to a head in the next 18 months as to are these elements going to come together? Is it the advertisers that force it to happen?
I think, Richard, I would completely agree with everything you've said. I think there are a number of things probably to flag. So first of all, I think several years ago there was a sense that the way we would start to measure, you know, video on YouTube would be through some sort of fusion process. And there was a lot of work looking at how that could work. And I think one thing that came out of our project, which I hope was a message that we put across very strongly, is that panel-based measurement systems, I think, arguably remain probably the most reliable way of determining who is actually watching your content. So obviously, YouTube has enormous visibility and insights into what is being watched, you know, across millions of different video files, across different devices and platforms and so on and so forth, in the same way that Sky does across a portion of its set-top box universe. The problem is, of course, that it tells you very little about who is actually watching. And I think the difficulty is that when you look at the volume of data that the big internet platforms have available to them, and you look at the challenges of fusing that quickly in a fast way and a simple way with panel-based data, it's much more technically challenging, I think, than perhaps anybody really realised. And particularly, I think we came out of a project feeling that for the foreseeable future, panel-based measurement still has a role to play. Now, clearly, you can't keep growing panels, you know, endlessly to accommodate a more fragmented, complex market. So there's going to have to be some meeting of minds. There are some very interesting new approaches, I think, coming into the market, you know, that people like Nielsen are now trialing with people like Barb, which will allow, you know, meter-based measurement, you know, or router measurement, which give you greater visibility. And I think some of those will make their way into the market. I think it's also worth saying just briefly that I'm not sure there's the clean polarization between YouTube on the one hand wanting to be measured in a certain way and the broadcast on the other hand. I was very struck in every geography when we spoke to the TV industry that most broadcasters in many geographies have very large pools of inventory sitting on YouTube and indeed other platforms. And at the moment, they find that hard to sell.
It's not necessarily measured. My kind of view of the future past is that I think there's more consensus around measurement than there is around metrics. I think that there is a feeling that if a, and I'm not putting words in their mouth, but if a YouTube were to invest significant money to become part of a jig to be measured, there probably would be consensus about how that measurement would be done. The issue would be if the jig then says, you must report yourself at 1 minute level and like a TV channel.
Yes.
So is there a point at which we're going to accept that if there is a common transparent measurement system for everyone, if people want to report themselves at 4 second granularity because their ads run 4 seconds or 30 seconds, that's for them to decide as opposed to the market to dictate, no, everyone must be measured at 1 second or...
So I think one more recent development is that has come out of the project is that I think over the next 6 months or so, we're going to see Europe's TV industry debating the notion of setting out some common, consistent principles which TV companies should adhere to in relation to measurement, metrics, and advertising. So, for example, there's debate about whether we should commit to advertisers, but we will only charge them for an ad which is fully viewed 100% on screen and so on in a brand safe environment. Now, I think advertisers in many cases would welcome that. It means that you're very clear about what you're getting and you get what you paid for. And I think there's a notion that some digital businesses will find it difficult to address or adhere to some of those standards. But I'm not sure that necessarily is a bad thing, that if advertisers are looking for transparency and clarity and consistency, and it's easier to agree that at a high level and have some common high-level principles which the industry regard as the gold standard, you know, a manifesto almost for perhaps the global TV industry, which obviously EGTA, the global TV industry body, has now rolled out, and EGTA is very closely involved in that, as is Thinkbox and other trade bodies around Europe and the world indeed. I think if the global TV industry adopts a set of standards like that, which help to exemplify the kind of premium standards that the industry wants to adhere to, I think that's good, and then digital businesses can make a decision. I did, oddly, if you search for some of these comments, you'll find them, but one phrase that began to turn up quite often during the course of the discussions we had with the industry over last year was this notion of subprime advertising inventory. And this notion that, just like some of what happened in the US mortgage market, as anyone who's seen The Big Short will know, some of the advertising market has seen a kind of subprime inflation, and that we're perhaps valuing stock, which actually, when we look at it in a bit more detail, shouldn't be so highly valued. And that's creating issues with the market. So I think businesses have a choice. You know, you can either decide that you're going to adhere to a set of clear principles and allow yourself to be independently measured and audited and so on and so forth, and give advertisers greater clarity and consistency, you know, about what they're getting from different businesses. Because, I mean, let's be clear, I think, as you've suggested, there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that advertisers want to be able to measure the unduplicated reach and frequency of their campaigns across both TV and non-TV video inventory. And at the moment, that is hard to do consistently across every market. It's impossible to do with any real degree of accuracy and veracity. I think there's lots of efforts to bring these markets close together. You know, you're probably aware of the sort of efforts of the MRC and obviously SIM doing some work in this area. So there's lots happening, I think mostly for the good. I think the industry knows there's lots of change ahead and is moving quickly to try and change.
One final question is an interesting one, because you mentioned at the start the perceived differences between the US and Europe. And I think arguably, up until a few years ago, the general perception in the market would have been that Europe had more advanced measurement systems than the States. And I used to go to the States a lot, and people used to, you know, grill me about what was happening in Europe. And the origins of SIM, to a certain extent, were this feeling that Nielsen wasn't moving quick enough. In the last few years, undoubtedly, the perception we see at our conferences is that there have been big strides that Nielsen have made in measurement in the States, various approaches incorporating online video deals with Facebook, etc. When you spoke to people, is there now a perception amongst the people you spoke to that somehow the US now has a better system than Europe, or was that challenged? Because certainly Yeah, you mentioned router meters, for example. Norway already has a system using router meters, measuring that sort of stuff. But I guess that's not as big a market as the ones you were speaking
to. It's a really, really good question. So first of all, I would completely agree with your view that I would talk to advertising agencies, you know, TV companies 10 years ago, and they would say exactly what you say. They would say that Europe, and particularly the sort of more advanced European markets, are the gold standard in measurement, and the USA, which is a huge, complex market, is lagging well behind. I think today it's a different picture. So I completely agree that I think Nielsen has made great strides to improve what it does. I'm surprised, to be candid, with the amount of antagonism that Nielsen sometimes faces in the US market. I think if you looked last year, there were a series of reports, obviously, of big broadcasting businesses having quite fraught commercial negotiations, you know, with Nielsen.
Yes,
you know, partly because I think some people would suggest that Nielsen has sold the industry in the US on a very gold-plated and expensive version of measurement. And it's no doubt that what Nielsen does in the States is a very expensive system to run. I think the analogy that we had a lot of fun with during the course of the project is derived from the old Orson Welles movie, The Third Man. So there's a moment, I think, when Orson Welles gives his famous Switzerland versus Italy speech, you know, which, you know, paraphrasing brutally, he says that in Italy they had 30 years of strife, civil war, pillage and general unpleasantness. And what do they produce? The Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci. Whereas in Switzerland they had 500 years of brotherly peace. And what do they produce? The cuckoo clock. I think in the analogy, some people suggested that Europe has been a bit like the Swiss cantons, that the JICs, to some extent, have prevailed over this sense of peace and brotherly love. And what you've seen in the US is much closer to what Orson Welles was referring to in Italy, in that it's been out and out bloody brutal warfare. And what that has done on the positive side, I think, has stimulated a lot of investment and innovation. So when you look at some of the really interesting businesses that are starting to do interesting stuff, you know, everything from the sort of TV-based platform plays, you know, that some of the big manufacturers have rolled out, to what companies like Samba are doing, to initiatives like C-Flight, to sort of targeting attribute initiatives like OpenAP. My sense is, you know, characterizing brutally, that there's a lot more innovation, partly driven by competition, by very well-funded industry participants with huge scale in the US market, than there is in some of the smaller European markets. I think we've just taken slightly different approaches. Now, I don't think it's easy to say that. I think the Europeans often look at the US and think, crikey, there's a lot going on there. It'd be good to adopt some of it over here. But I think Americans often look at Europe and say, it's a lot more straightforward in some respects. You know?
Yeah, it can be a two-way street. And also there is a number of speakers do return to the theme that there is a lot going on in the US that just isn't applicable to the European market. So one good example is one of the big drivers of addressable advertising in the States has been that the cable companies actually own a certain amount of inventory on all channels every hour, which doesn't apply. So hence the Virgin deal you mentioned was largely done with Sky, because Virgin doesn't have any of its own TV channels, so it's not necessarily a huge incentive.
I think there's a data issue underpinning that story. So it's absolutely the case, isn't it, that because most of the big US TV platforms have had some access to inventory, they've been able to roll out addressability, you know, more aggressively than some of their European counterparts. You know, other than Sky and some of the Liberty Global companies, there's not much happening with linear TV addressability on most of Europe's big TV platforms. It's been quite slow and complex. I think there's also a data part of that story, that in the US, because of the role the big data agencies are able to play in matching set-top box data with credit card and loyalty card and other data, which allows you to sort of chart or analyse the effectiveness of some of these addressable campaigns, I think when you talk to big advertising groups, that has helped to unlock a lot of spend. I spoke to one of the sort of middlemen, you know, the companies that aggregate addressable TV inventory and make it easier for agencies to buy across all of the different pools that are out there. And they will say, look, if you want to launch a new Aquafresh competitor, I can help you figure out which households by and large in the US market buy Aquafresh. I can help you deliver your ads predominantly to those households. And then in many markets, I can tell you across the States, I can tell you which of those households went on to buy your Aquafresh competitor. Now, in most European markets, that's very hard to do for a whole set of reasons, and GDPR certainly hasn't made it any easier.
I was going to come on to GDPR, but I won't, purely because...
Yes, we'll be here all week.
People can probably tell from the enhanced quality of the audio, we're actually in the same room together at John's office, and he's got a meeting coming up, so we've already overstayed our welcome. So there may be some things perhaps we need to pick up in a few months as a follow-up podcast, not least... you mentioned some of the next steps from this, so it'd be interesting. I think it'd be something we'll be tracking at ASI over the coming months and years. It's a really interesting initiative. So thanks, John, for making the time to speak to us.
Thank you for your time, Richard. A pleasure.